Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. If you read our promotion, you know that we're going to be talking about the Secretary of Education designee, and I decided to do a show on her, unlike my stance that I haven't done that much on any of the politics pertaining to the election that took place last month. As you know, I didn't vote and I don't vote because there's no one for me to vote for, party-wise or individually. And so I sort of like stayed away, but this one I had to get involved with because it deals directly with what we all are here for, and that is discussion, conversations about the state of public education in this country, and around the world to some extent, but in this country, and what this person, if she is confirmed, could possibly mean for the state of public education going forward. I was going to do the show solo, and I decided, no, that I had, as friends, colleagues, probably three of the best people in Michigan to talk about and have a conversation about Bessie. I'm going to call her by her first name, Bessie. And you know these people. They've all been on the War Report, some more than once. And I'm referring to Russ Ballatt, who's a historian, former professor at Eastern Michigan in the sociology department, so you know he can't be all bad. Partly bad, but not all bad. And also, Dr. Thomas Petroni, professor at Wayne State University. He can't be all bad because he's at Wayne. I went to Wayne. And then I'm going to call this my special, special guest, and that is Miss Helen Moore. She is one of my heroes. And if you guys remember, and if you've been with me from the beginning, you know Helen has been on the show a couple of times, and I've shared one particular story about her over and over again, and it goes back to 1943, summer of 1943, when it was one of the most deadliest race riots in the state's history and among also the country's history. Helen and half a dozen or dozen other black students were in their school, which was a white school in a white neighborhood, when the riots broke out. And there were a group of people gathered outside that wanted to come in, drag them out, and do who knows what, beat, murder, what have you. These were elementary school kids, age kids. And the principal locked the door so that people couldn't get in. While that was happening, and this is a true story, folks, while that was happening, my mother, pregnant with me, was walking down one of the main boulevards on her way downtown to a store that probably doesn't exist anymore, Sam Cut Rates department store, when a police officer stopped her, told her she shouldn't or couldn't go downtown, and she was going to defy him because she wasn't going to let him tell her what to do. She was pregnant with me. And he begged her, and he finally told her about there was a riot taking place downtown, and that white men were roaming the streets looking for black people to beat, murder, lynch, whatever. And he convinced her to turn around and come home. And as I always say, Helen was locked in her school, being protected by her principal. I was locked in my mother's womb. And this police officer literally saved probably both of our lives. I would meet Helen about a little over a year ago, and she has been my hero ever since. So, folks, this is my hero, Helen Moore. Now, let me go back to what I said. I was going to do this show as a solo show, but the people I have here today are so outstanding that I'm going to be on the show with them, but only as the village idiot, because they have the knowledge, the experience, and so we all are going to benefit from that. Welcome, everyone. You guys know me, and you know I joke, I play, and I tease with my friends. And Tom, you often get the brunt of my joking and teasing, although the last couple of times you've been punching back in the heart, too.
Absolutely, here we go. Jim. And I usually like to play the village idiot, but I'm happy if I don't get to.
Okay, my turn. All right, if you guys, audience, got our promo, then you know there were several things that we identified in the promo. And I'm going to let these people get us started. Russ, I want you to get started. One of the first things I want us to talk about is the history and the methods that the DeVos family, and particularly Bessie, have used in their war on public education there in Michigan, and I think for at least the last 20 years or more. I have characterized their methods as a study in anatomy of what I talk about here all the time, the Machiavellian agenda. And by the way, Russ has written a book some time ago about the DeVos family. So, Russ, tell us something about these people in a historical context.
Sure. Betsy DeVos is married to Dick DeVos Jr. Her maiden name, Prince, was from a family that supported ultra-right-wing, religious right worldview and politics. And the DeVos is the same story. So when they married, literally billions of dollars came together under their control for promoting as early as 1975 what Dick DeVos's father called creating a Christian nation, which of course is a political term that means has theocratic, you know, rule by religious doctrine implications. That's basically what DeVos's Betsy and her husband have been doing through their foundation, through political donations. As early as, well, in the year 2000, they put a voucher proposal on the ballot. Michigan Constitution bans public tax dollars going to private schools or to parochial schools of any sort, and they have been trying to defeat that. 6 years prior, in 94, the Republicans passed what was called a charter school law that is really amounts to a constitutional violation because they are private schools getting public funding, but they call themselves public academies. And so the DeVos's, while they didn't necessarily want charter schools, put their effort into charter schools to try to disestablish public education in Michigan. And but at the same time, they were really using that as a base to build a movement through charter school families and so forth to get support for vouchers and undo the Michigan ban on using public money for private Christian education. And I want to qualify the word Christian here. And the DeVos's funded a group that published a textbook for use in Christian schools and charter schools and anywhere, truthfully, that was a history book that glorified the South during the Civil War. They called it the South godly, in fact, was the term they used, and they referred to the creation of the 14th Amendment, which, you know, gives equal protection and immediately after the Civil War. they referred to the 14th Amendment as a result of ungodly forces. So this is their brand of Christianity. And again, it's really political posture that masks itself with religious pretense. And so, at any rate, I think this is what they've been doing pretty much ever since, and they have been really targeting the Detroit public schools. Public schools across Michigan have been suffering under this charter law over the years, but Detroit public schools is a special target in their newsletters, which Helen routinely forwards to all of us, and they are hoping to see the collapse of the Detroit public schools. With her appointment now, she will have her hand into using $20 billion of Title I federal money for federal vouchers to try and further weaken public education and promote the political religious education system that she has been championing all her life.
Okay. Helen?
Yes. Thank you for your wonderful introduction. I appreciate that.
You know something like that was coming. You know me. You have the distinction of being the person to file the first lawsuit against a government or a sitting governor who was attempting to take over to privatize public education. And this goes back to, what, at least 10, 12 years or more? And your activism in public education goes back almost to that day back in the summer of 43, and how you went to law school as a result of it and the whole nine yards. The DeVos family, you've known them just like Russ for a long time. What can you add to what Russ said in terms about how they have come about their tactics for using their wealth to destroy public education, and particularly
well,
there
in Detroit? Well, first of all, she was over the Republican Party for quite a while, and she sits on the board, and it is her organization, GLEP, Tom, remember what I call it, GLEP, but it's GLEAP, GLEP and GLEAP, Great Lakes Education Project. Every time a law was changed against our children, takeovers, etc., she was in the midst of every one of them. And when we would go to Lansing, the state capital, to fight these laws, they were there and going against what we were standing for our children. We wanted self-determination and all that, and they had all this money, and they were giving them to Republicans and anyone else that they felt would do their deed, and we were up against them continuously. What she is about is destroying black and brown school districts. Beneath all of this money she gives, I understand she gave $500 to Negro College Fund, while she gave millions to anyone that wanted to start a charter school or wanted to go along with her program, but using public funds, while she has all of this money, and I figure if she wants to start her own school system, she's got enough money to do it. Why is she messing with our children and our funding? This has been going on for years. We defeated her with the voucher program. We defeated her in many instances. Even the lawsuit, some people say, well, it went to the Supreme Court. You were fighting against the takeover of the school system back then. It went to the Supreme Court, but it was sent back to Detroit because our mayor and some of the other folks wanted mayoral control. Even when we won that with 67% of the people in the state of Michigan, and all of us on the phone worked hard to do it, even with that, a few months later, they changed the law so that we could still be under the pressure, oppression of the governor. And so we've been fighting ever since. And she is the culprit that has a lot to do with New Orleans and all these charter schools that's coming up. But Detroit has the most. and they are no better than public schools, and many of them are worse. So that's the story behind our battle with Betsy DeVos. And the last thing, if she gets in, we know what we're looking forward to. So that's why we're going to D.C. Tomorrow night to fight this woman's appointment as the U.S. Secretary of Education. That's pretty much it.
Tom?
Yeah. Let me think of what I can add to that. I think that both Russ and Mama Moore have done an excellent job of describing for us what the DeVos family is like. And I agree with all that, but I want to add another piece to it. There are a lot of organizations that are not of the political bent of the DeVoses, are not of the far right, sort of authoritarian Christian, using that word in a problematized way, as Russ did for us earlier, who nevertheless really paved the way for groups of the far right. And I don't think that we should lose sight of that, because we have to remember the work that was done at all levels, national, state, and local, by political actors in the educational sphere who were not of the DeVos's stripe ideologically on many matters, but did have this faith in the idea of market-based educational reform as something that they believed needed to address the ills of what they thought was a deeply problematic public sphere. There were many organizations that went along with that vision, and I think we need to remember that the Obama administration put forward Arne Duncan and later John King, who were champions of what is really, you have to think of it in a twin way, as both an ideological vision for free markets, but also being a handmaiden to the transition of public monies into private hands. And part of the reason why someone like DeVos, like Betsy DeVos, who was so handily defeated in 2000 with her voucher measure, can have enough credibility to be considered for the Secretary of Education, is that the discourse on what is acceptable in the educational realm has moved so far to the right. And that's true at a national level. It's true at a state level, where Jennifer Granholm, a Democrat, appointed our first emergency financial manager, Robert Bob, and even in the level of Detroit, where, yes, the DeVoses helped to set the terrain through pushing through the charter law, through pushing for the removal of the cap, but were very much working for many years in partnership with organizations at the national level, like the Walton Foundation and the Broad Foundation and the Gates Foundation, and their local partner, the Skillman Foundation. So none of these people are of the far right, socially and religiously authoritarian bent that the DeVoses are, but they have played an absolutely crucial role, particularly in places like Detroit, to bring about the conditions that we've seen. They've provided the professional expertise through groups like EdTrust Midwest, which have given a veneer, and it's a very thin veneer, of research credibility to the idea that the way to help public schools is to close them down, or the way to reform them is to shame teachers and students and families and administrators publicly through assigning them grades like F, when the only reason they're receiving an F is because they serve low-income children. So that's the main point that I want to add. The DeVoses have had a profound impact, particularly in the educational realm, but many others as well in the state. But they've had the collusion of people also in the Democratic Party. So those of us who still have one foot in the Democratic Party and maybe one foot outside at the same time need to really realize that we're fighting for the soul of our own party and have been for quite some time.
Have either of you and all of you considered what I have been talking about on the show for the last 3 years? And let me just say this. If I try to summarize what I know about her and what you guys have educated me about her over the last year and a half, is that she, to me, and I'm also, slash her family, represents what I have been talking about in the form of the Machiavellian agenda that I'm always talking about, and the aim, the bottom line of the MAC agenda, as I have laid it out, is ultimately not just privatization, not just turning everyone into a commodity, but this ultimate aim here is a remaking of humanity and the planet, as I've always said. And in the remaking particularly humanity in the vision, the image of their belief in the free market economy, the free market political economy, and that all individuals should become commodities. All individuals should seek to work to enhance their individual portfolios in terms of making themselves more attractive as a commodity to others, and to select friends, family, girlfriend, boyfriends, wives, etc., on the basis of that person's portfolio and how attractive it is in terms of meeting the image as created by the people who manufacture, control, and perpetuate what I have called in the past the Machiavellian agenda. I see her, and Russ, you mentioned something earlier in terms of their religious image, their religious goals, and how they would love to see the world come under their vision of religion and its control of human activity. And what I have said in the past, and I'll repeat again here today, this remaking of humanity, DeVos getting into this office of Secretary of Education, and with the obvious fact that the Republicans control, 30, 40, almost, I don't know exactly, 35 states.
Yep.
And with, you have Democrats, governors, legislature, who are also, what we say here on the show, corporate Democrats, or DINOs, Democrats in name only. I see, and my guess, my greatest fear here would be, over the next 8 years, we will march, we the country and the world, will march closer and closer and closer to this end game of remaking, not just public education, folks. I'm talking about remaking humanity. And I'll go a little further in that we see it already with the charter schools, the no excuses, the zero tolerance, the school to prison pipeline. But we also see it, and especially in the last year and a half, through the work of Emily Talmadge, bringing to our awareness here on the War Report and the country how technology, ed technology, not only do they want us to buy it in the trillions of dollars, but the programming itself is a major step towards turning our kids, presently and in the future, into zombies, on the one hand, use that as an exaggeration, but also as part of remaking humanity, the programs, the subliminal training, and all that is being built into the use of ed technology. DeVos, to me, is going to further that and accelerate this move towards, eventually, we're re-socializing our children for this generation and future generation to be in the made in the eyes of what I call the Machiavellian agenda. What do you guys think of what I just said?
Well, you got me thinking, and I have been thinking a long time about the whole thing and what's happening to our children. It seems that is what you're saying is correct, but it's more sinister than that. I think they want us to be in our children through education, permanent underclass. I'm seeing us returning to slavery, pretty much so. The people.
Can you speak a little louder, Ellen?
Okay. I'm seeing us returning to slavery. I see them setting up underclass, permanent underclass, worse than second-class citizenship. As I read and try to keep up with the DeVos family and the people that are following her and the people that are in connected with her and her husband, they are setting up a situation where we will never be able to rise above where we are now. In other words, what they're doing with black and brown children is sending us backwards instead of pushing us forward. And that's worse than what you just described. The end result is permanent underclass for our children by going through the education system and controlling it with their vast amount of money. That's the way I see it.
Helen, I have echoed those same remarks over and over again in the form of saying that not only this remaking of humanity into the image of what they want it to be, there is what I have also said, the notion of disposability. This people who don't make the grade are disposable and will be disposed of. I've also talked about what you just said in terms of slavery. This, to me, is absolutely a return to slavery. I'm taking up more time than I want because I want you guys to have all the time, but let me say this one point. I've compared where we are today with the collapse of the Reconstruction period, that 12-year period right after the Civil War, where many people have argued that that 12-year period was the most democratic, the most liberal, progressive period in American history that only lasted 12 years. And then there was this super national effort to crush that movement, the Reconstruction movement, and usher in Jim Crow, where Jim Crow was worse than, if you can believe this, worse than slavery. So I see where we're going in terms of the privatization of public education, privatization of everyone, everything, as a third Jim Crow era coming. First slavery, Jim Crow, and now Jim Crow 2 coming. But anyway, I go on too much. Back, Tom, you being, and also you, Russ, being the historian, and Tom, you being the researcher and the stuff that you've researched, and I know your book that you did on how black folks crave and support charter schools, which I'm still trying to get a copy of. It ain't cost too much money for me, Tom. Got to look out for me, too. But anyway, here we have this historical pattern of the last 20, 25 years, which, by the way, coincides with the rise of neoliberalism in the form of Reagan and Thatcher, as I've always said, Yao Ping in China and Pinochet in South America. Do you see Bessie DeVos being able to consolidate the gains of the movement which she has funded and participated in from her perch above public education in the form of the Secretary of Education? Do you see her being able to consolidate the gains of the movement and further the destruction of public education like no one else has so far?
Well, when you refer to the movement, I guess I'd have to know which movement you're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about the movement towards privatization in education and that neoliberal movement, I mean, that spans a pretty wide ideological divide. That goes all the way from now the mainstream of the Democratic Party, which is very neoliberal and has supported neoliberal education reform and other forms of neoliberalism, including the intrusion into our lives that you were talking about, where we are formed through the very idea of business exchange, that we're supposed to be sort of entrepreneurs of ourselves is the way that some theorists have talked about it. But if we're talking about that movement, the neoliberal movement, there are actually vestiges of that movement that are worried about Betsy DeVos, that in the moment that they were trying to lend some credibility to the charter movement, which has been exposed to a great deal over the last couple of years or so, even in some more mainstream press, their vehicle for lending that respectability is through some sort of veneer of regulation of charter schools. And I think that for some in that movement, she actually represents a face that they don't want to be represented by. I need to know which movement you mean.
Everything you just said.
Okay. Well, so do I think that she's helping to consolidate that movement? I do think it's very, very bad news that Betsy DeVos is likely to become Secretary of Education, although I expect Helen Moore to take her out in the next couple of days when we get up there. And I mean that not literally physically, but the only the way that Mama Moore can truly take people out. I think that in some ways she also represents a crisis point, and we should talk about that as well in the neoliberal spectrum. I think that there are a lot of neoliberals who are worried about Trump and some of the people that he's appointed. I think that it could play out in interesting ways. I mean, I shouldn't use the word interesting because I think all of them will be destructive for children, especially for the children who are already the most afflicted. I think the success of the neoliberal movement has been the way that it has become such a broad umbrella that you could have everyone from an Arne Duncan or a Rahm Emanuel or an Obama even, all the way through to people like the DeVoses, and I'm sure that there's even farther right ideological positions, to have a relative sense of unity around the neoliberal vision, the marketized vision, the one, again, that you talked about, that not only dictates how we interact in the business world, in the world of commerce or the world of goods and services, but all the way down to how we're related to each other in our personal, family, most intimate relationships, how we think of ourselves. I think that that's quite a broad movement. And I would say less that she represents a consolidation and more that she represents something that the more opportunist and centrist neoliberals helped pave the way for. And just as I gritted my teeth in anger watching Republicans before the election repudiate Trump when they had prepared the very ground to make Trump such a success through the vitriolic terminology that they always used, which was always very race-baited and poor-bashing and women-bashing and teacher-bashing, so too we have to think about the ways in which the current moment has been created not just by Republicans but also by Democrats and others who were part of the neoliberal movement. So the answer to does she consolidate it? I don't know. Is she bad news? Yes, for sure.
Okay. Spoken just like a true academic.
Oh, thank you.
And
I'll get you back to that one.
Okay. All right. Russ?
Yeah. I think there's several phenomena at work that portend a very ugly vision for the future of a society where, in the 1980s, the DeVoses were funding the Free Congress Foundation and the Heritage Foundation, not wanting to say that those agendas were set by the DeVos funding, because it clearly wasn't. But they were putting out material about relaxing child labor laws 3 decades ago. If you look at the Amway model of business, it's a multi-level. And Amway, of course, is the funding. It's where the DeVoses come from. That's the where they got their billions. And it's a multi-level marketing company. And, you know,
Are you trying to say pyramid scheme?
I was going to go a little further than that, actually.
Cool.
According to a number of studies and testimonies in lawsuits by a number of former Amway people, including people who were in mid-level leadership, Amway really operated in such a way as only about the top 1% of the company. It's an interesting percentage. The 1% really earned a lot of money, and they exploited the people at the bottom of the pyramid of Amway. Now, I'm not terribly sympathetic to the people who were the so-called distributors at the bottom of Amway. The way they exploit them is they get them to buy the products of Amway and force them in a way that a number of people they've written books on this, called it a very cultic manipulation. And they use a combination of nationalist, patriotic appeal, and religious appeal. So the attraction of the doctrine that comes out of the DeVosses is that it gets people to commit themselves and suborn themselves to an economic model that exploits them. If you take they at the very top get enriched. I mean, Dick DeVos Sr., he was worth $4 or $5 billion years ago. The younger DeVosses are all just, you know, phenomenally rich, and they use this to buy and own politicians. In this case, the Michigan Republican Party, the House of Representatives, they fund the caucus. Half of the campaign money in 2014 for the entire Republican caucus came from the DeVosses, and the DeVosses ordered them to enact legislation that was specific to their priorities, even against other parts of the Republican Party, and they prevailed. I totally agree with Tom and Helen. Nobody, there is not an articulation from any part of the political spectrum that's really challenging the model that the extreme right is trying to implement, and they in fact empower pieces of it, you know. And in Michigan, it's only recent where there's really been any kind of sustained criticism of the DeVosses, because they think they're going too far. Well, they were going too far for 30-40 years now, and it's not out there. But and finally, on the point of slavery, they support organizations that don't that believe that the Bible endorses slavery, and so any contemporary model that exploits people is okay because the Bible says slavery is okay, and so the religion really serves this economic model for the Amway DeVos image and for the larger movement. Every group that's called pro-free enterprise, the neoliberalism, and you know, even the paleoconservatism, pushes an economic model that fuses religion with so-called free enterprise dogma. The Acton Institute in Michigan, the Mackinac Center in Michigan, they work together to create an environment where the general public will be exploited and will be the worker base that's unprotected and exploited in a model that a true 1% will control in a manner extreme even by today's standards.
We have a question from Sheila in Rhode Island. She says, does the guest think that the DeVos religious goals for America as a Christian nation will cause some chinks in the neoliberal failings? I think what she's saying here, Will, what you just said Russ, mm-hmm. is that pushing this Christian right agenda possibly lead to their downfall. But let me go back. Sheila, if you're listening, go back and remind you, because I know you have been here almost every week with us, when I was talking about neoliberalism and the series that I did on neoliberalism, a year or so ago. Remember, I told you that the idea for neoliberalism, of course, goes back to the 1930s when a group of people got together. Milton Friedman was one of the little bit players then and wanted to undo what Roosevelt was doing and how Roosevelt was destroying the ownership of the country by the 1% of that era. All right. Fast forward to when Lewis Powell was nominated for a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court by Richard Nixon, and he put out this manifesto to the 1% of that era, and when he basically looked around and saw that the country was going to hell in a handbasket because of the civil rights movement, the gay liberation movement, anti-war movement, the ecology movement, the women movement, da-da-da-da-da. All these minorities were rising up, wanting to take their share of democracy away from the people who were controlling them and make America, quote, a better country in terms of democracy. And Lewis Powell basically said to the business community, we need to take back same thing that Buck, I'm laughing now because it just hit me, that Trump is saying, make America again. He was saying we need to take back our country. We own the country. We, the business elite, own the country. And for those of you who've been with me, you know I talked about how John Jay, the first Supreme Court justice and the president of the Continental Congress, and his famous saying that we who own the country ought to govern the country. So you got these three people saying pretty much the same thing, and that when Lewis Powell got the business community, Ford Motor Company, Chrysler, General Motors, IBM, you name it, come together, use their wealth to try and take over the political control of the country, they failed. They went back to the drawing board, and they said, what do we need that to get over? They went back, and they got something together called, we need our own political party. They got the Republican. They go out again, they fail. And finally they said, we need something else. And that something else was Farwell and the moral majority. The right-wing Christian, I don't know, zealots, whatever you want to call them, people who go to the voting polls, rain or shine, off your election, local elections, state elections, you name it, and they all vote as a block, locally, nationally, et cetera. When those three elements came together, they started, quote, taking back the country, state after state, and, of course, the Southern strategy that Nixon came up with and implemented. And so that religion was a very, 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 very powerful ally in the hands of those people who have become known now as the neo-lib from the 1980s going forward, but actually going back as far as the Nixon era. So, yes, Sheila, I'm saying that religion is playing. I don't know, if I'm going to try and answer that question, whether or not it could become the vehicle of their downfall. The 35-year grip they've had on the country and the world, the neoliberals, religion hasn't seemed to hurt it. At least that's my answer. Helen, do you want to take, we got a few minutes left, you want to take a shot at that question
it's deeper than that. While you were talking, I was just thinking about how they set this up, and this is not just by accident, and it's designed, let's face it.
That's right.
But here's what really bothers me, is they've got all this money, and they control and oppress us and our children, and they do all these hideous, ugly, dirty things to people, but yet the money brings them to the point of a Betsy DeVos and all these other people that Trump is putting in place that have a tie-in to education, and they will be in position to continue murdering our children. And I say that literally. When you take the minds and you oppress people, you end up murdering them. So I don't know if I've gone too far with that question or not, but while you were talking, I saw an image of it's almost over with. We are at war. And if she gets in position, just what you described is going to continue and it's going to happen unless we stop her.
Wow. Thank you, Helen. Coming from you, that means a lot to me because I've been preaching this for a long, long time. And sometimes I felt like I'm out there on a limb by myself in terms of as I see things that has happened in the past, what's happening presently, and where it will end if there isn't major, major, major upheaval among the people to bring a halt to this crap. But, okay. Either Russ or... What's the other guy?
I'd like to
Tom. See how forgettable you are, Tom? I had to get to Tom. Come on. I cannot do a show without
it. Sounded like Russ was going to go in. Russ, why don't you go ahead?
Well, okay, I'll do a brief version. Within the movement that we're talking about on the religious right, there's still fundamental economic doctrine. But I encourage folks who want to learn more about this. There's a movement called Christian Reconstructionism, not well known, but February 20th of 87, Christianity Today, of all publications, did a 7-page indictment of Christian Reconstructionism. And Christian Reconstructionism informs just about everything that the DeVos's fund, and it calls for, it basically has a vision of a post-constitutional government where biblical doctrine sets policy. Ralph Reed, who was the first real organizer under Pat Robertson of the Christian Coalition, you know, summarized it as following, that basically the Bible says that slavery is okay, so in the modern context, that means that employees must submit to their employers because the employers are established as a part of the authority of God. And so that's the kind of doctrinal thinking we're thinking of, and it's not just the DeVos's are wacky. It's that there's a whole movement and a whole network that goes from major ministries, including the Falwell folks and Liberty University, which teaches this stuff deeply, across a whole network in this country and many organizations. And that's the doctrine that's at the core of what's driving this plan to deconstruct public education and to reconstitute the country in a way where biblical law rules. These people were inspired by the Puritans of the 1620s, you know. So it's Calvinist in its core. That's my quick little addition I wanted to make.
Tom, you got a minute I want to say something
okay.
In the last 2 minutes.
I'll use my minute quickly so that the village idiot, as you called yourself, can have the rest of the time. So I think that we need to remember that the genocide of black and brown people in our cities was well underway before Betsy DeVos rose to the position that she's wants to rise to. Sure, she was working there in the background and she was part of it, But we need to remember that although we need to stop her, that stopping her isn't enough, that we can't feel like we've removed the cancer if we stop her. The cancer is neoliberalism. Clearly also, the current political bloc that has been in power in this country for quite some time has benefited from religiosity, from the way that it's incorporated, the way that it's commodified religion and attached a large portion of it to the ideological right in this country. It's been very valuable for that conservative movement, or whatever you might want to call it. But in that movement, the far religious right was never supposed to lead. It was always Wall Street that was supposed to lead those other players. So I do see the potential for, I think that Betsy DeVos would be wise, those who see her as an asset are probably hoping that she does not speak too loudly about the authoritarian religious right components of her vision and sticks more to her free market guns, because I think that otherwise it could present a problem. And that's all I want to say to folks, too, is, when you see Tanya Allen of the Skillman Foundation speaking as if she represents the best interest of Detroiters, as she did in the New York Times, being the one to oppose the DeVos's, I think we have to remember that evil lurks not just in the DeVos's, but in the much broader movement for neoliberalism that has taken such sway, as you said, particularly since the rise of Reagan and Thatcher and the others.
I need to cut in here, Tom, and it will take me 1 minute. All right. Look, that 482 forward, isn't that the Skillman Foundation? Well, they're going with us to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Under the guise that they're with us. Okay? That's all.
And
I
some of their
say.
Membership is probably good people.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Well, our time is up. Our time. And, Tom, you know you hogged my minutes in your 1 minute that went three. Let me see. You got me back. Okay, let me say this, folks. I'm sure many of you maybe did not expect for the show to take this direction in terms of bringing us back to neoliberal, which has been the theme of this show ever since day one. I'm glad if you stayed and you listened, you got another dot that we can connect here on this show, that not just DeVos as the billionaire who wants to destroy public education per se, but we're talking about DeVos as she may be the person who helped bring religion to the forefront as one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful force, as they used to say, of our times right now, and how religion not only will take over education and rebuild it in its image, but also politics, the economy, the whole country, and et cetera. With that, I have got to go because I've gone 1.5 minutes over our time. Thanks, everyone.
Thank
the three of us,
me.
We can always get together individually or collectively back here on the War Report. You guys are my buddies, my friends. I count on you. Thank you very much. And with that, have a good Sunday, everyone. Bye now.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.